Hello, and welcome to Social Design Insights, the podcast that brings you the leading voices of the social design movement from the fields of architecture, engineering, planning, art, and whoever else we can find that's out there trying to make the world a better place. I'm your host, Eric Kessel, and I am having a happy day. You know why? Because Emiliano is back.
Yeah, thank you. It's such a pleasure to be back on the show.
Good to have you back, man. You've been missed. How are you?
Good. It's been an exciting year, so I think that will be the topic of the conversation, so I won't start immediately, but how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's been a full year, and, you know, we got done with all these episodes, and, you know, I was thinking there was so much that happened that didn't get to, and I wanted to do, like, a wrap-up, like a year in review, and there's only one person I wanted to do it with, so thank you for joining me and, you know, having a look back at the year in social design.
So, well, I'll start with the first question.
Sure.
What was exciting for you? I mean, you had a huge amount of incredible interviews, some with past honorees of the award, some with completely new faces. Who really surprised you?
You know, I was worried you were going to ask me questions like that. No, it's like trying to pick out my favorite children, you know? Like, I don't have a favorite interview. I would say that the year was bookended by two surprising segments. One was the resistance segment in the beginning, where we just asked designers, like, you know, what part should designers play in resisting ongoing geopolitical changes? I mean, not limited to the election of Trump here in the United States, but, you know, sort of tilting towards autocracy all over the world. And it was amazing, the sort of ideas that came out and the surprises that I got of people who were, you know, not only working in this field, but have been for a decade. And I came away from that segment realizing that this whole concept of resistance is nothing new, and it's nothing specifically American. I mean, it's an ongoing enterprise that has been going for decades. And I think all socially conscious design work has to be rooted in some form of resistance to extreme forms of power. The last segment, which was about, you know, designing designers, really started off, you know, as an attempt to kind of talk to, you know, foundations and funders and stuff, and, you know, really diversify to the point where, you know, we were talking about the entire ecosystem of people around the social design community that help promote it and support it and enable newer, better ideas about how to practice design. And, you know, I just had a ball doing that one because, again, it was one of those things where once you sort of open the door, you realize how big the room is, sort of thing. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting because I've been traveling a bit over the last months. And, you know, mostly I've been invited by schools, and but also I've been visiting projects and running a bit of my own things. And I always have the impression that there's a big discrepancy between what people talk in terms of social impact design. So when you go to one school, they have one idea, in another, they have another idea. Then you go on a project and it's like, whoa, that's not even design. And it's actually social engagement. And then you go back. And I think that is really quite interesting because nowadays that there's a sort of professionalism, or at least an attempt to establish what could be teaching and doing socially active, socially engaged design. But I think that still it's so vague what we mean for this. It's interesting because I was recently reviewing a school in the Netherlands, and there was a like some students that were trying to make a project on how to solve the problem of migration of refugees caused by global warming. And, you know, so huge topics. And then, you know, you go and work on a specific housing project or in a community project, and really the issues are so back to earth. So I was also wondering, you know, how is your understanding of, you know, of the boundaries of this field? Because it's so blurry sometimes that I'm just getting a bit worried that we're losing a bit of focus.
I share your concern that, you know, the mantle of social design may grow so broad as to include everything and thereby including nothing. I am bolstered by the fact that there are a lot of people working specifically on that problem. There are people out there who are developing curricula around public interest design. They're trying to develop definitions for it. They're trying to standardize it. And at some point in the middle of the year, just in, you know, my own sort of off-book research, you know, I did kind of take a little historical investigation. And, you know, this is often the course for new professions or spin-off professions, is that they go through this period of ambiguity where, you know, there's a surge of activity and creativity and all these different things. And I'm all of a sudden a lot of people are doing it, and then someone stops and says, well, wait a minute, like, what is the actual boundary here? What is the definition of what we're doing? And then there's a period of discussion and potentially argument about, you know, what it means. So, you know, 150 years ago, the profession of architecture was going through the exact same thing, in the sense that, you know, it was kind of competing with master builders and masons and gentlemen artists and that sort of thing about what exactly architecture was going to be. And of course, that debate still goes on. So, you know, do I get concerned about it? Yes. Taking the long view, I think the field of social design is really where it needs to be. I had a recent conversation with Kyle Reese on the show, who was formerly with the Ford Foundation and now TechSoup. And he estimated that we were really sort of in the middle. You know, we were in the middle of the cycle in terms of, you know, the development of a field. And that made me feel a little bit better. How about you? What are your thoughts on it?
I don't know. I think I'm traversing a bit a kind of transformation and crisis moment. So,
all right.
Yes, I'm a bit less external and analytic than your observation. I think it's quite interesting that there is a moment of social unrest that is also pervading and influencing what, you know, the necessity of being more socially engaged in every discipline, and specifically in architecture. There is a discipline that is so engage with making cities and also creating relations among people. But I think also that making more and more students, especially young architects, aware that their previous education or their mindset is actually not trained enough and not sharp enough to deal with these amazing social issues. And sometimes also I think that it can be quite frustrating because, like, you know, how do you deal with the consequences of financialization of the housing market? Housings are not anymore a use value, but are becoming completely a commodity. And so it's becoming really hard to rent or to buy a house for basically for anybody. So how are you dealing with that as an architect? And how are you dealing with the fact that our social relations are disaggregating or fragmenting more and more with how our cities are meant? So I think that this is posing also beyond the way of how we act as architects, is posing the architect also in the position of a citizen and in the position of someone that, in a way, is understanding this crisis a bit better than the other ones and needs to be responsive from a human perspective to how do you deal with that. And what I see is that the responses are the most uneven. So some people just try to, be better people, without really understanding that I think that making a better city is not about only designing it, but it's also about understanding how you as a person are modified by what you do. There's a very interesting quote, actually, from David Harvey. I was rereading this recently from his text, The Right to the City. He writes, "The right to the city is far more than the individual liberty to access urban resources. It is a right to change ourselves by changing the city. It is, moreover, a common rather than an individual right, since the transformation inevitably depends upon the exercise of a collective power to reshape the processes of urbanization. The freedom to make and remake our cities and ourselves is, I want to argue, one of the most precious yet most neglected of our human rights." So I think that what I thought was interesting in this, and what I feel as a practitioner I believe is valid, is that by doing something, you're not thinking that you're helping a community or you're helping a situation, but you're putting yourself within the situation that you're trying to help. So in fact, it's a way to transform your understanding of something. And I think that too often we're seeing social design as looking for solutions, while in fact, it's about putting ourselves in the middle of a group of people that are progressively going through a process of trying to improve things, whatever it is. It can be a situation of housing, it can be a public space, it can be how do you create a place for confrontation, how do you speak out or a conflict rather than pacify it. So I think that all of us should understand that it's about us in the first place trying to transform ourselves more than just going and find a way to solve this and that, because it doesn't work that way.
So let's start with that, or continue with that, rather. Social design is a process of not only just changing the city, but changing ourselves and an exchange of change, I mean, to be corny about it. How do you see that manifesting as it butts up against what currently exists as the market? you know, the sort of idealism that you're talking about, you know, I see it in my students. Certainly it's been in my practice and in yours. I know you've been all over the world since we last spoke and teaching in the Netherlands and Taiwan and I think South America as well. What's your sense of, you know, the next 5 years or 10 years, you know, as these students that are thirsty for this sort of change run into a market condition where their skills are often more asked to do the opposite of that, to entrench systems of power and finance?
That's a very good question. And, you know, I don't want to be Marxist here, but it is true that till we have a situation of the specific neoliberal situations in which capitalism is traversing now, it's quite difficult to deal with this incongruences. However, I think it's also very true that capitalism society brought us to a situation of great civil unrest and of great issues. And all these issues are issues that all policymakers are seeing. And also the IMF and the World Bank are recently stating that there is an issue. So I think that society is more and more aware of this and more open to find alternative ways of doing things. Architects and trained designers are people that have the capacities to give a huge contribution, not alone. Probably they'll have to work with geographers, with anthropologists to understand the situation of the city from a larger scope. However, we are trained to do this. And I think that we can bring a huge contribution. And I think that we can also be paid for this kind of work. The only thing that is about not only, you know, working in a 5 days a week, you know, nine to five job in a big office won't probably shift, you know, it's going to be very difficult to shift the market from having that kind of position. I think we have to progressively invent new ways to practice, and simply doing it, we will learn better ways to sustain it and to perpetuate it.
I don't know, man. That sounded pretty Marxist, but it made total sense to me. So I don't know. If you're a Marxist, what am I? Anyway, what did we miss this year, Emiliano? You know, what was the thing that happened in the world of social design that you felt was kind of most understoried? I'm not speaking specifically about the show. I mean, like, in general. I mean, what really lit you up this year?
I've been thinking about that. I think there's not one story that tells it all. I think that, I mean, I have a lot of friends and companions and also past winners of the award that did achieved a lot with great projects. I think what has been more interesting is that overall, we are all becoming, I think slightly more realistic. And I think that social design is becoming not anymore like a second practice, but it's becoming like a pretty much an attitude for a larger group of people. So I think that that's quite interesting. And I think that what's quite interesting is that we are facing huge political issues. You mentioned the situation in the US at the moment. But if you also think, you know, a situation like in Europe with like France, where you have this movement of the Yellow Vest, that is a way, it's also a reaction to a president that is not as right-wing as Trump could be. So, I mean, you see that there's a general social unrest, because even if there's a, it could be a left or a right-wing policy up there, they're still worldwide from India to China to Russia to South America. There is a general understanding that in this situation we're becoming more and more stuck. And so I think that seeing the perspective of reform in design is becoming something that is an exigency. And I think that at the moment, what is exciting is that there's no one coming up with that approach that is just the right one or conclusive. And that's why I'm not quoting any of the projects that I saw this year. But it's more about seeing more and more an exigency is that there is the necessity of a new approach to architecture and design, and that it's probably not growing as an overall large solution, but it's probably growing as many smaller local approaches that are creating small differences in many different places in the world.
You're listening to Social Design Insights. We hope you're enjoying this little catch-up from those of us at the show. But Emiliano and I are going to take a quick break. If we don't break for some music, Emiliano and I can go on talking forever. Thank you. Welcome back to Social Design Insights. Emiliano and I have been catching up on all matters social design. And coming up, we're going to touch on a few more things and give a little preview of the year to come in this field known as social design or public interest design. At any rate, let's rejoin the conversation, already in progress. That's an exciting thought. So, I mean, it's an open territory, but at the same time, we're not exploring out of, you know, academic interest or anything. I mean, there's actual, like, necessity, a global necessity to venture out into that territory, which sounds, by your read, to be very democratic and very open at the moment.
And what would be your take to that same question? I mean, do you have anything in mind that was just like evocative or of in terms of social design in during this year?
First of all, I would agree with your statement. I mean, I think there are so many interesting designers out there that are constantly challenging, you know, what our idea of design should be. And they never stop. They never stop trying to find better solutions for the world. And it's one of the things that's so rewarding about being in this field is that it is growing that way. I guess I would point to a few symbolic things that really meant a lot to me. You know, Balkrishna Doshi winning the Pritzker Prize. You know, I looked at that, and I looked at it not only in the context of his work and remembering when I first became acquainted with it as an undergrad, but also reflecting on the fact that, you know, in the past 4 years, you know, we've had Aravena, Shigeru Ban, and Doshi winning the Pritzker Award. And it seems, you know, when you've got 3 out of 4 years of, you know, designers who are not necessarily exclusively socially focused, but carry a very heavy social message in their work, it seems to me that, you know, the highest prizes in architecture are shifting their focus away from the deconstructivist era, away from this era of just formalism where, you know, we just kind of make shapes and play around, into something that has a more social agenda. So maybe that awareness, that recognition that you were speaking of globally and geopolitically is also happening on the Pritzker community. And that struck me as meaningful. I guess the other thing that I would point to, and it was a couple months ago, I kind of opened up CNN.com and was reading the news and saw a profile of the Lynching Memorial and Equal Justice Museum that was done by Mass Design. And, you know, I remember meeting Mass. I met Michael and Alan in 2010 when it was still a very, very young firm. I think they might have been still in school. And just to watch the growth of that firm and the special people that work there. And, you know, they're on CNN. You know, it's mainstream. Every time I've seen architecture in CNN, it's because some person has designed a high-rise that is offensive to the neighborhood or falling down or some spectacle architecture or something like that. And, you know, this was a mainstream media outlet featuring a piece of architecture that I think, you know, should be included in probably the top 5 or top 10 works of 2018 globally in any category. And to see the arc of growth, and I know the Curry Stone Design Prize was awarded to Mass Design. What year was that?
Well, I have to check this. I think it's 2011 or 12.
Yeah. To contemplate the sort of arc of that organization and the people within it, I think was really inspiring. And you know, it kind of got me thinking about, you know, all the young designers that I know now that are, you know, working 9 to 5 and then working on side projects in the evening and, you know, maybe thinking about going back to school or leaving their job or starting an organization or something like that. And there's a path kind of laid out before these young designers now that perhaps did not exist when you and I started our paths.
Yeah, I mean, I think recognition is always a bit dangerous. I think it's interesting also that the Pritzker always choose, architects that in a way were both doing something that was that had some impact in society, but also that had a normal practice with great buildings and beautiful buildings as well.
Baby steps, so then, man, baby steps.
Yeah, well, but also, you know, it's a safe choice to choose Doshi. And I remember visiting his cave at the Ahmedabad Nigufa in Ahmedabad. You know, this, it's like he made this amazing organic cave in the style of Pascal Hausermann on Antvilovac, you know, this kind of bubble underneath the soil to exhibit the work of Hussein, that is an artist, an Indian artist, quite famous Indian artist. In a way, Doshi had this huge interest in form in architecture. He studied, you know, and worked with both with Louis Kahn and with Le Corbusier. And but also he did some project like the Aranya Community Housing that is, you know, seen as one of those projects that really was a housing project that was sensitive to the needs of the community and actually to their responsibility in improving the housing. So it was years in which I think housing was really in the center of I'm talking of the 70s. This project was actually finished in mid-90s, but it was a moment in which I think it was the finishing an era in which housing had a substantial importance in how architecture was shaping communities. And that is something that probably after those years really shifted completely. With completely different politics that through Reagan and Thatcher influenced a bit neoliberalism all over the world. However, it is also true that these figures are mostly, I think, important for their humanitarian kind of approach to architecture at large, even if they had a very aesthetic approach also to architecture. Well, I think that, you know, what's interesting now is that there's a lot of architects that just have a political approach to architecture. And I think that's valid, and it's maybe even more interesting because it's really seen not architecture again as housing communities and possibilities, but really seen architecture as generated from a community, which is quite different. And I think that's probably the new generation that is arising.
Yeah, we can hope so. And I didn't mean to overstate the symbolism, but I think there is some symbolism there in terms of, you know, who we choose to give laureates to. I had an interview with Jason Szupak, the dean at Arizona State, a couple of months ago, and you know, he talked about developing different forms of peer validation, right? And fundamentally questioning, like, how do we ascertain what is good architecture and what is not, and not assume a priori that this is good architecture? How do we distance ourselves critically from the cultural training that we had in school and through magazines and that sort of thing, and really start to think about architecture and design differently. For me, I guess one of my hopes, I'm going to tell you one of my hopes for 2019 and beyond, and then I want to hear one of yours. One of my hopes for 2019 is that we begin to disaggregate, you know, this idea of, you know, beauty and architecture and then social usefulness and then, you know, political architecture and this sort of thing. And, you know, we arrive at an evaluation of design that is all of those things simultaneously, where, you know, we're not doing what we've done for the last 20 years and kind of having a debate about, you know, the aesthetics of a particular piece of design versus, you know, its social utility versus its political weight and these sorts of things. But all those things are, I don't know, tied together, and you know, perhaps, you know, our standards of beauty begin to evolve around things that we know are doing good for other people. I don't know. That's maybe the most hippie thing I've ever said on the air. It's true. Anyway, what about you, man? As you look into 2019, what are your ambitions for the field of social design?
Well, for the field, for the general field, I think I hope the situation will radicalize a bit more because I think we're still too innocent as architects. And I hope people will really, and architects and students will just engage a bit more, you know, working and getting their hands dirty. I feel that when architects are a bit detached from the field and the communities they're working with, we are actually tend to be trying to do the good thing, but with the wrong means. So I just think that the situation in which architects realize a bit more that they're also citizens would be the best wish I could have for 2018. And I think this inevitably will happen because young architects and even not so young architects are having a hard time to get at the end of the month. So it's not simply a matter of you know, a privileged class trying to help the others, but we are ourselves at the stake here of trying to find a level of survival that is good. So I think that, you know, what I really wish is for people and for architects just to start engaging more and more in understanding what are the issues, communicating with others, and trying together to use their qualities and even aesthetic qualities, as you were quoting, and their capacities at best to serve society. And I think that, again, I always go into this conversation with students. If you're a very good student and in designing very beautiful things, it makes no sense that you force yourself to go and you train yourself even more to go to speak with people, and that is something that maybe you don't like to do. the essential aspect of, I think, being socially engaged is to work in teams. So you need to find someone that really loves to speak with people and spend hours drinking tea and coffee with the neighbors. And the people that are really good in, you know, making detailed design should do that. The people that are really good in defining color should do that. Because you should really find what is your pure contribution to the community, not to force yourself, you know, to do everything, which ends up to do everything not so well. So I think, you know, doing good socially engaged design is, as you say, is doing great design. That means a design that is both inspirational, that is both beautiful, but also that serves the community in a just way.
Man, that's amazing. Yeah, when are we going to get together, Emiliano?
We should, yeah, we'll just, you know, go to into your community in Oakland and start a project. Come on.
You are, let's do it. Are welcome anytime. You show up in the Bay Area, I'll convene my students and we can go and do it. We can do something. We'll figure out something to do.
Okay.
This has been great, man. Thank you so much for making time and for joining us. I think I was sincere in my opening remarks that, you know, as I thought about doing a rear review and kind of thinking, taking a step back and thinking about social design, you were who I wanted to have that conversation with. So thanks for coming back.
Well, thank you, Eric. And I really enjoy always speaking so much, speaking very much with you. And thank you also for making all these great interviews. I think this year it was really a great achievement. You're really creating an archive that is, I think, essential for the practice. And it's really essential that it keeps alive and that it goes on contradicting and getting more contributions to the different voices and the different facets of the social design. And I also want to thank, while I'm here, Baruch for his fundamental technical support and advising through the show. That is always, I think, a fundament for what you're doing.
Amen to that.
Thank you so much for that acknowledgement.
Guys, meaning the audience, if you don't know, this is Baruch Zeichner. Baruch produces all of our episodes and is really quite a magician in terms of putting all this stuff together and makes it so that myself and Emiliano and the guests can just kind of come on and ramble and eventually end up sounding smart. So take a bow, Baruch. It's been a great year, and you have my thanks as well.
Well, and thank you very much. And that was beautiful and humble, but we have extraordinary guests and an amazing host, so it makes my job a lot easier than it would be otherwise.
All right, this is getting a little sappy, so let's draw it to a close. Thank you both. Please, happy holidays. Happy holidays to all of our audience and former guests as well.
Thank you. I hope to speak with you guys soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel. I'd like to thank my brother from another mother, Emiliano Gandolfi, for helping me take this whole year into stock. It's been a full one, and we hope, as always, that you've learned a few things. There are way too many guests to thank on this broadcast, but check us out on social media and visit us on the web at currystonefoundation.org. If you have any feedback on the show, ideas for guests, want to talk about 2018, 2019, or just want to chat about social design, you can always write to me at eric@socialdesigninsights.com. That's E-R-I-C @socialdesigninsights.com. Social Design Insights is produced by Baruch Zeichner. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Curry Stone Foundation. We're going to be taking a break for the holidays, but we will be back on January 10th with a whole new slate of amazing designers asking tough questions and delivering inspiring answers. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and we'll keep you posted on the latest on the show and all the latest in social design news.